The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
Janet, what's a podcast?
A podcast is a thing humans invented to procrastinate from doing important things, like actual work or spending time with their families.
Neat. Enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today we're talking about Chapter 23, Season 2, Episode 9, Best Self, directed by Julianne Robinson, written by Tyler Stracely. Michael conjures a giant golden balloon that he claims is the human's transportation to the real good place. In order to get on board, Eleanor, Chidi, Tahani, and Jason have to be the best version of themselves. Each works through their self-doubt, culminating with Eleanor asking Michael to describe the reboot where she and Chidi were in love. Michael reveals that this was all a giant stall tactic. He actually has no idea how to get to the good place. The four drunkenly celebrate their last night before they're doomed, and Tahani gets the idea to speak to the manager of the afterlife, the judge. They leave the neighborhood, which dissolves behind them. My guests today are Tom Zawacki from the property department, script coordinator and writer of this episode, Tyler Stracely, and Manny Jacinto, who plays Jason Mendoza. Manny, Tyler, and Tom, welcome. Everything is fine.
Hey.
Hey, what's up? Hey,
there's not much to talk about in this episode, so I guess we should just maybe wrap it up and do what's good.
Right.
You guys been watching Atlanta? Let's talk about that show.
Yeah.
That's a great show.
Okay.
Manny, this episode actually has some emotion from Jason Mendoza.
Oh,
he considers his own sort of, you know, what the real bad place would be like for himself. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah, it was being at a Skrillex concert and waiting for that for that bass to drop.
And it never comes.
Yeah, and it never comes. I think we had a couple of alts for that, right? But I think that was maybe the one that really hit.
Mm-hmm.
I think going through that line, it would have been easy just to say it as one would say it, but I think with Jason, it just comes from a deeper place, you know, a place that really hurts.
That's meaningful to him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the tears started coming out, and you see that Jason actually really cares for some things.
bass drops specifically.
Yeah. Bass drops in particular. I was trying to think back, is that the most emotional we've seen Jason Mendoza be to date?
As recalling in previous episodes, there have been. They just haven't been on the episode. Like,
oh,
they've
it
been
made
cut.
It.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Like, I remember there was one episode where I think the episode where Eleanor is going to turn herself in, like, where she confesses.
Right.
Like, there's a moment where she says goodbye to everybody. And there was a moment between her and I got really pretty emotional, I think. But I just didn't fit the character at the time. And it was cut. So
it also could be, we've learned during this podcast, because the first edits of these episodes are about 50% too long. They're like 10 minutes too long when they first, you know, get them into a cut.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to see. It's fun to see in this episode Jason be sort of advisory and paternal almost. You know, you have that scene that we'll talk about later with Tahani as well.
Oh, yes, yes.
It's fun to see.
Oh, my gosh.
Tyler, it feels like an overarching theme in this episode is dealing with stuff, coming to grips, you know, exercising your demons. Chidi and Eleanor have unfinished business. We learned that Janet and Jason have unfinished business. We learn that Michael has been lying about something and needs to come clean about it. How are those things talked about in the writer's room? Are there particular themes per episode?
Yeah. I mean, this one is, it is what you said. It's kind of a culmination of a lot of different things, because if you kind of look at the episode by itself, it's a little bit of a finale-ish episode because it's, I mean, they realize they're doomed. Like they have to leave. The neighborhood has to go away. Like it could play as a season finale, if not, you know, a series finale. So like, it is nice to just be able to have each character, just dealing with their relationship stuff and their, you know, the ethical things that they've kind of learned up until this point. And the audience is kind of getting emotional with them, I think, because it's, you know, it's like, is this the end? Like, this is it. Like, and again, it's the last time we see the neighborhood for, you know, how long? I don't know.
I can't wait to talk about that. That's, I had an emotional reaction as a fan to that.
Right? When it collapses on itself?
Yeah. And the ladybug, yeah.
The ladybug. The last we see.
So sad.
Props are a character in this show, Tom. They're all super specific. Talk to us a little bit about the makeup of the departments. What is the art department? What's the property department? How do they overlap? I'm thinking specifically of, in this episode, the sort of dance floor scene outside. There's a table. on the table is a bar, I feel like, and then there are sort of future speakers, you know, Afterlife, an Afterlife sound system. Also, I'd like to announce my new band, Afterlife Sound System. So how much of that is you?
So the property department is basically anything that an actor touches, but it also overlaps into things like eyeglasses or watches or rings, and then it turns into things like cell phones and laptops. So the good thing about when we're in the afterlife, if we have all of our actors standing there just talking, we have Will and Ted's glasses. It's nice. Mm-hmm. Nobody has a watch. Nobody has a ring. Nobody has a phone. But on this episode, like you're saying with the like dance party thing, so like set deck would do, set dressing would do like the tables and the chairs.
Okay.
And then like the alcohol on like the bar is kind of us because we made very specific like afterlife like bottles. Like there's a quick shot of like a tequila bottle where Kristen and Will are in the balloon, and that was just like some weird thing that we had made. So it's just, it looks like a real tequila bottle, but there's no like logo or label. And those speakers you were talking about, it's funny because that was like a mini callback that we did, because those are the same speakers that are in Michael's office when he's having his meltdown and like singing to Lady Gaga with like the colors. Mm-hmm. So we're like, oh, it'll be funny. It's just like, here's these speakers again.
That's his DJ kit.
Yeah. I think there were also Bad Janet's like DJ speakers in the previous episode or something. So it's things like that. And then everything like in this episode, they eat yogurt for the last time. And so that's us. And we can't really have it be froyo because we're outside and that stuff melts. So it's mashed potatoes, everybody.
Oh, are you serious?
Mashed potatoes.
Yummy mashed potatoes. Whoa.
Manny loves it with glowworms and all.
Mashed potatoes and candy.
Literally, that's what it was, yeah.
That's disgusting. I didn't know that.
Were you eating it?
Yeah. I mean, being Jason Mendoza, I have the responsibility to be eating that
stuff. To go all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no way I can't be eating any.
Yeah, because it looks right, but it'll hold up much longer as opposed to actual froyo. I think in the pilot there was actual froyo, and then very quickly, I didn't do the pilot, but very quickly they were like, "No, we gotta get something that holds up here."
Yeah,
we're in Los Angeles, we're outside.
Let's talk a little bit about food. Food are interesting scenes. That's your department, right?
Yeah, food is property.
Which means that if someone's eating a sandwich or froyo or what have you, that you've got dozens of them, right? You have multiples ready because we're going to burn, we're going to shoot coverage. I actually, when I was thinking about this, particularly last night, it came to mind, like, I don't know if people know how a television scene is shot. Like, they don't just line
probably
up three cameras and we do it a couple of times and move on. Like, a scene is shot how? Like, they'll line up the actors where they want them. The cameras will sort of be on one side of things generally, wider, like further away, showing more things in the scene. Once they're happy with that and whatever, then we'll move in. They'll push all the cameras in, change lenses usually, pick off singles or two shots of that kind of thing. Then we often turn around. So a scene gets – how many times would you say a typical scene, how many takes we do?
Oh, man. I mean, depending on how important the scene is. I mean, I guess on average, I want to say almost 8 to 10.
I would think so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, easily, I would think.
But that's like a good number. We're not like Stanley Kubrick over here doing like 78 takes.
Yeah. No, the show is very lean,
making people
very
cry. Yeah. No, I'd say 8 to 10 is like a good amount for all the things I've done.
But it's a lot of mashed potatoes.
So many mashed potatoes.
And so the question I had about food was, not only do you have, you know, multiples of things so that each time we shoot a new take, especially if it's something pristine like a sandwich or whatever, you can have a new fresh one in the scene. But I think it's also you guys that race in as soon as cut is called with a spit cup, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that an actor can physically void the contents of their gross mouth into a cup, and you have to throw it away.
I have so many actors' DNA. It's crazy.
Oh, gosh.
You seen that Black Mirror episode? You guys are bummed.
I suppose it also warrants saying that whereas Tom's voice may not be familiar to you from watching The Good Place, in episode 20-something, Dance Dance Resolution, I believe you were a soulmate.
I was. I had quite the cameo. It was literally 2 seconds, not an exaggeration. I played Lerf when it was going through Eleanor's like soulmate options. But so we were just on the set and they had hired, I guess, like featured background because just walk in, wave, come in. And I think the note was like, nobody looks that silly. And there were pictures that were taken. Feel free to find that internet. And I have big dumb hair and a silly beard. Because I'm a big dumb idiot. And I think it was Morgan, one of the producers, who was like, hey, Tom, do you want to be a soulmate? And I was like, yeah, sure, man. I had to like suppress my like stokeness and be like, yeah, whatever. Let me just.
Oh, you had to play cool.
Yeah, let me take this walkie off. It's not a big deal. Just whatever. And I just thought it would be a fun thing. And of course, I thought it would get cut. And that's how I found out how popular the show was. Because no exaggeration, I'm on screen for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And I guess the whole screen's me. So it's not just like
you
in the background.
It's you at Eleanor's door. And it's Michael repeatedly in a montage going, this is your soulmate, a golden retriever. This is your soulmate.
Yeah, it was right before
this
a
is
dog.
Your soulmate, Lerf.
And I just wave. And so that's when I found out how popular the show was. Because I got tagged in like Facebook posts from people I knew in middle school that I have not talked to in like 15 years. Oh. People I haven't like thought about in 20 years or 5 years. Like, my friend Tom was on The Good Place. I'm like, who are you? I don't even remember who you are, but I was like, this show's pretty big.
Show's pretty big.
People are freaking out about my 2 seconds with no lines.
It's your big moment.
But anyway, I'm still waiting to flesh Lerf out. And
I think there's a chance.
Go back to that reboot. See, me and Kristen have our soulmate time.
Let's talk about the Lerf Sean spinoff.
Lerf Sean spinoff!
Now, you raise a good point. This show, I think people have seen it. Manny, you and I just spent last weekend at San Diego Comic-Con International.
Wow. Yes.
Talk a little bit about your experience there.
It was nuts. I mean, Jamila, myself, Darcy, and Will, we have not experienced anything like that before. And coming in, we didn't know what to expect. Like, we didn't want to put our egos up. We didn't want to have any high expectations, so we didn't know what we were going to get into. So just going in and I remember walking down to the hall where we were going to do the panel and just seeing all these people waiting in line. And all of a sudden they see us and they start standing up and clapping. And I was like, well, this is people watch our show.
Oh, yeah. This is nuts. I tell you something?
Yes.
That was the line of several hundred people that couldn't get into the 2,200 person.
Oh, whoa.
Gosh. Yeah.
I mean, some may have made their way in, but that was like the maybe please God let me line.
Yeah.
They were just so stoked for the glance.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was crazy. I've done a lot of, I've been to Comic-Con down there, I don't know, 3 or 4 times, Emerald City in Seattle, New York, Chicago. This was bananas. We played a 2-minute previously on clip before we took the stage, and then I crossed the stage by myself to go moderate the panel. And when lights came up, there was a roar, and then there was more roar, and then there was more roar. And as they lit the room, it felt like a Borg cube, like it just went into infinity
of
the first section, the second section, the third section. You're like, holy cow. Like, wow, this is nuts. Amazing. And then when I introduced the cast, the roof blew off.
Oh,
joint.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we have the best fans.
I mean, crazy fans that really are super listening, very smart, and love the specific details in every aspect of the show. Tyler and Tommy, you guys have been sort of part of this happy group of merry wanderers since what? Brooklyn? Since Parks and Rec? Since when?
Yeah, I worked on Parks and Rec, and I did the Brooklyn Nine-Nine pilot. It was like after a season of Parks ended, we went straight into that. So I never worked on the show, and then I did this. So yeah, my third Mike Sure Thing.
Pretty cool.
Dude keeps me employed.
I like it.
Yeah.
I don't know if he knows who I am, but I got a lot of
interest. After Lurf, everybody knows who you are.
That's true. I forgot. I'm a big deal. Manny, go away.
Oh, yeah. I was a baby on Parks and Rec. I was a PA.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's when he started as my surrogate father. And...
are you trying to avoid the word daddy?
Yes, and it's working. And so I also did the pilot of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, saw you there, and this. And then I did a little bit of stuff with Aziz, Master of None.
Sure, of course, yeah.
So it's all been in the family for quite a while.
That's really very cool. Yeah. Now, this is your first episode with your name on it of The Good Place?
It's my first ever episode of television.
Hey, that's awesome. Congratulations. Exciting.
Thank you, yeah, yeah.
What went into that? How was that brought to you as a possibility? What sound did you make when Mike asked?
So I kind of, in my head, tried out for this, like, because I made little videos for the writers to entertain them.
Oh, are you describing something called Keeks?
Yes, I've heard that they've been discussed before.
They have, but I still have no idea. I need to...
Yeah.
What is a Keek?
It goes very deep, but basically a Keek is... It's a now defunct website of like 30-second vines. They like tried their own version of that. And then I decided I'm going to make my own version of that and take their name. And what I did was...
You're describing theft.
Oh, right. Oh, gosh. Now that I say it out loud.
Theft.
Right. But anyway, so I would take photos of the writers and I would add a photo of an open mouth from the internet. And I would just like play the frames... So that they'd have a closed mouth and an open mouth,
sure.
And close and open for lines that I would say. So I'd edit this in
kind of a jib jab.
Exactly, yeah. It's like a stop motion or
South Park.
Yeah, like South Park is what it looks like. So then I would just have them saying like the traditional character things they would say. Like one of the recurring bits, which this is not a bit. I'm in love with Joe Mandy. Uh-huh. I love this man.
Sure.
And I would joke that when his wife is out of town that we go hang out.
Mm-hmm.
So I
joke. You were joking.
I was joking, but I want it very badly.
I mean, you're not joking.
So right. So I animated a montage of me and Joe going out and doing things over a weekend. Like we went you know dancing at a club. We went and we saw the new Renee Zellweger movie in theaters, and I rested my head on his shoulder and went out for, you know, wine and dinner. So I think it's also a therapeutic way of getting out like what I feel about Joe without having to actually like bother him with my feelings.
But I hope he reciprocates.
You know, he laughed. I hope that
did he move offices further? From
yeah, a little bit. But
block your number.
Yeah, he hasn't talked to me too much. But I don't know. I had a nice time making it. And so what you know, going back a little ways, Mike saw these, and I think he thought I was weird enough to be able to tackle some of the insane humor of the show. Mm-hmm. So he gave me an opportunity to write a script.
And
so,
how was that presented to you? Privately, in an email, in the room?
It was in the room. It was actually...
Because it's got to be a rite of passage, right?
It is, yeah. The room was all there. We had just finished breaking the episode, and I remember he looked over and goes, Tyler's going to write this episode. And I didn't know it was coming, and everyone applauded, and I almost cried. And it was, you know...
I could cry right now about that.
Yeah,
That's an anointing. That's a... Like
it is.
You are, here's your black belt.
Exactly, yeah. And then also, again, to have such an emotional and funny and sweet episode, too, to have as my first one, you know?
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, thank you.
As I said earlier, it's fun to see the unlikely Jason Mendoza in sort of a father figure kind of thing, trying to help Tahani get through something. Tahani, you know, you plant a nice seed earlier on of saying, like, her, you know, she would always fix problems by saying, I'd like to speak to your manager. And then Jason tells a story about his mother being the manager of a pet store. And she tries to cut Jason off, and you won't. And you tell a terrible story about that your mother got fired after you robbed the pet store she worked at, that you robbed it together.
Yeah.
And
it was all a dream.
So great.
Oh,
so
my gosh. When I read that, I laughed out loud.
So that was on the page?
Yeah, it was. When I first read that, I just couldn't stop laughing. It was all like Jason's stories are just the most ridiculous wherever they're from. I mean, they're typically from either his dance crew or his family or his school. And it's all so ridiculous. I don't know how do you guys even come up? Like, there's got to be some different versions that you guys kind of come up with.
Well, it's so funny because in the room, it's so much fun for everybody to just pitch on, like, adding more and more things to this crazy long Jason paragraph. Right? Yeah. You know, you're like, okay, another paragraph of crazy nonsense that's hilarious. But in this case, I remember it was funny because we had written out a long Jason thing like this. And then I remember Dylan had the idea, it was his idea to be like, it was all a dream. So it was just a funny spin on it, you know? It was like a new way of doing this Jason thing.
But are the words ever said like, that's too stupid for Jason?
Yes.
Have those words ever, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because it was all a dream. Is like, you'd get there and be like, the fork are you talking about?
Because he was as earnest as he ever is about any other story.
Hey, man, yeah. I think I have a story that can help. Like, why did you begin this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and Mike usually tries to like reel that in because all the writers kind of push a little further to see how far Mike will let it go.
Sure.
And so this one really made it through. I don't know if he was gone that day or what, but it was a good one.
I want to talk a little bit about, Tom, define Greeking.
Mm. I don't know where the word came from. But basically, if you have like a Coca-Cola can, something with a logo on it, and we want it to be a soda, but you can't see that it's Coca-Cola for whatever reason, there's like the cheap, quick way where we have like this thing called a Greeking book, which is all these just like different shapes of just solid colored stickers, different colors. Mm-hmm. We'll try to put it on there in a way that doesn't look dopey, but it always kind of looks dopey. Or the good way that we do it in the property department, we'll just make a real good fake label that says like Tommy's Cola. And it's like in red with that same kind of like white cursive, and we'll put it around a Coca-Cola can or something like that. And it's basically just, we need this to be easy cheese, but it can't be easy cheese.
Right.
And so we'll make it Mr. Cheese.
I'm having a memory. You're describing the can. When I was growing up, like in the 70s and 80s, there was like a Hollywood standard, not Budweiser can that was in every movie ever. Like it had the same sort of script font, tiny paragraphs of like cursive writing. But yeah, I remember that very distinctly. Now, are things ever suggested in the script for products that you'll make? For instance, in this episode, standing outside the balloon as they're trying to go through that scale, Janet's holding a, like a gift basket that you might find in a, you know, on a private aircraft. And in it is a bag of somebody's cuttlefish chips.
Lord Vivian's vinegar-drenched cuttlefish chips.
Was that in the script?
Yes.
Yeah. Why?
It didn't need to be.
I know. Why?
I don't know. So I don't have an answer to that.
Is your grandmother's name Vivian or something? Like, where did that come from?
No. I think that one was every writer pitched a different word.
Okay.
Because I remember mine was vinegar.
You're suggesting that The Good Place is written by Mad Lib.
Yes. Oh, we go around the table and everyone says a word. The and
But any when, of it. When does your department get that? And they go, I guess we have to make a cellophane metallic bag.
Yeah, basically.
And maybe multiples.
So the note will come from the room. It's like, make a fake bag of this fake thing, and this is the name. And then our graphics department, either this guy Graham or this guy Evan, they'll like go through all these versions of what the bag should look like. And they'll be like, cool, that graphic is great. And then we'll go and we'll probably send it off to a place that could like print on a cellophane bag. And we'll put in probably Cheetos because it doesn't need to be, you know,
but it needs
cuttlefish
to have
chips, but it needs to have weight. It can't just be like bubble wrap. But it's always very specific, and I feel like it rarely gets seen. Like we've done a lot of like magazine covers, and you'll see it very quickly. But like every single thing on there is a joke, and I'm pretty sure it like comes from the room. And my own way of doing that, like I remember I was doing one of Jason's notebooks, and it's like I knew this would never be seen, but they're like, just write in like 10 pages of things Jason would do, and we'll like copy them and print them out.
That's
just to
you.
Make
You've done some of those.
Yeah, I did one of those. This season, nothing spoilery, but just I wrote a notebook for Jason, and I was like, oh, let me come up with crazy Jason stories. And I was like, oh, Chidi's talking about the ethics of money, and I hate money. And because I got mad at Po' Boy once because he asked to borrow some money, and he said it was for drugs. So I was like, of course, here's the money. But then he told me it was to pay his rent, and I got mad because drugs are cool and rent is stupid. And that was the day I learned about dogs. And I'll just do these dumb Jason rants.
It was all a dream.
And then it was all a dream. And I'm doing it. I'm like, I know nobody's going to see this. I'm like, this is for my own fun insanity, and I'll put it in the notebook.
Who wrote the Kierkegaard rap?
Oh, that wasn't me. That was probably definitely came out of the room for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What was the saying on the corporate stress ball?
Oh, yes.
Was there a logo or something?
Yeah, so yeah, Michael's Human Starter Kit. That was a good little Easter egg. I don't know how many people saw. It was Lonely Gal Margarita Mix.
It was?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, nice.
That's right.
So for those
of
you...
Was that stipulated in the script?
No, I don't think so. I think that was...
I think that was Gay Perillo's suggestion.
Yeah, I think it was.
Who's the prop master, my boss. Love you, Gay.
The best.
I think she's like, how funny would it be if it's Lonely Gal? And it's funny because that is what Eleanor is bending down to pick up when she dies.
Yep.
When the carts hit her. Or, yeah.
And as far as like a joke that never made it on camera, but it's on every bottle of Lonely Gal. It says like Lonely Gal Margarita Mix made for one. You don't need them anyway or something
it does
like
say that.
Yeah.
It also is like 90 proof. The margarita mix itself is like 45% alcohol.
Oh, I never noticed that.
There's all these jokes. It's like, it's hilarious that we love it, but it's like, obviously we'll never make it in unless we do a super tight like close up on it.
Now, I did also Google that margarita mix and I noticed people make it themselves. Like they make their own labels and they have it at parties.
Lonely Gal labels?
Yeah, yeah.
I have a bunch in my gold room. I can just give them to people.
Neat.
Best fans of all time.
Yes, exactly.
Lonely Gal Stress Ball.
Full episodes of The Good Place can be found on NBC.com and the NBC app. Let's listen to a clip.
We weren't getting into The Good Place anyway. I mean, look at us. A self-obsessed socialite, a ridiculous giraffe, an absurd British aristocrat, a narcissistic attention seeker.
Are these all me?
Yes. I was gonna do 8 for you and 1 for everyone. The point is, Michael, we forgive you. I mean, at least you tried to find a way to The Good Place. And that's the greatest thing someone can do. Just try your best. So, we hereby name you an honorary human. And we would like to present you with this human starter kit.
Car keys! So I can lose them and say, has anyone seen my car keys? And then I can do that, you know, that thing where you... Thank you! And Band-Aids for your stupid, fragile bodies. Oh, and look at this. A stress ball with a dumb corporate logo. Oh, I can't wait to keep finding this and then almost throw it away and then think, no, I'll use it. Oh, guys. A Dr. Oz diet book because you're all such suckers. This is all garbage that I have no real use for.
That's right. Welcome to being human, buddy. To Michael.
Talk a little bit about that human starter kit. There were car keys in it. What else was in it? What else was considered?
Mm-hmm.
There's car keys that I just pulled from our prop truck.
Those were practical car keys?
Yeah, like in the prop department, Gay Perillo, again, my boss, she has this big prop trailer. And it's like, hey, name a thing. It's in there.
Really?
Like, so we have a drawer that's just like keychains and keys because it's like, hey, oh, real quick, could he have his keys? We should just be able to have that. Not everything should be like a crazy thing that you rent and need to wait for.
Right.
And so, yeah, car keys were in there. The stress ball we made, it was a box of Band-Aids.
But like, as you say, a Greek box of Band-Aids, like a non-brand fake box of Band-Aids that somebody made on a computer.
I think we made a box of Band-Aids because he's going to pick it up and show it. And it's like, oh, it can't say like Target brand or whatever it was. Or it could have been Target brand. I don't remember. But it probably wasn't.
No, I think it was.
Let's go with that.
Original. I think so.
I'm trying to remember what else was there.
Okay, there was one thing in there that's very prominent when you watch it.
Yes.
It's a banana-shaped thing.
Yes.
But I can't remember what that was.
Was there also like an egg-shaped thing?
A
like
banana case? Like where you put a banana?
Oh, it was, I think.
To hold your banana without smushing
it? Yes.
Because humans are awful, and we have very specific things. It's like this thing
like
has one
use. You
need
this to save a banana for later.
Like those corn on the cob holders. Like,
yeah,
well, I remember my mom had those back in the 80s. It's like, all this exists, so my hands can't be on this thing I'm going to eat? Like, it's super dumb. Yes, it was a banana holder. But no, the egg thing was in Tehani's basket.
Okay.
Because that was like her thing. It was like a...
Oh, yeah, she wanted...
The hard-boiled...
Hard-boiled egg, yeah.
Was that? Business class.
Yeah, business class, whatever that was. But we had real Twizzlers in there. They were kind of covered up enough, but that was another thing. Yeah, it was a real Twizzlers pack, but it was like on the bottom enough. So I think it was like, whether this is approved or not, it'll be okay because you can only like 25% see it's Twizzlers.
Yeah.
And there's that book as well. What was
it? Oh, the Dr. Oz diet.
Dr. Oz book.
Yeah.
What does Ted say? Because humans are the worst.
Because humans are suckers.
Humans
they'll
are suckers.
Buy, yeah, they'll buy any self-help book to make themselves feel better.
Bunch of just crap in a box.
Right. Oh, it's beautiful though.
I think it was like in this like little
case. It was in a sweet box that said.
It had like the map of like the world on it or something maybe.
And it said Michael starter kit on the inside.
Yeah.
And he was elated.
Like, but somebody makes all that. Somebody's made every bit of that.
Yeah.
We make all these dumb things.
I love this show.
It's an awesome show.
And then a dance break happens.
Dance party.
How did you shoot that? What music did they play? I noticed that Green Light by Lorde is the song that they start with. That then segues to, as the evening begins to wind down, to Unforgettable by Nat King Cole. What did they play on set? What different dances did you try?
Initially, they wanted to do, at least for my bit, like a techno, a really bad techno type of song with just the worst sounds in the world.
But did the bass ever drop?
I don't. Maybe not. Yeah, it was that bad. But I think they luckily switched it to a more upbeat song like Lorde's Green Light. And that song is stuck in my head now.
Oh, yeah.
In a good way. Because like whenever I hear that song, it brings me back to that moment when we're all dancing together.
That's true. Yeah.
And it was just super fun. Like we were allowed to do whatever we wanted to do and just... we could look as ridiculous as we wanted to. And there was a specific moment when Will and I just started doing this weird thing where we were jumping up and down.
It's kind of a Greek Cossack kind of, right?
Yeah, I don't know the proper name for it.
I don't either. I don't understand how it's physically possible.
Because
you're going into the lowest of all possible squats and then your legs are flailed to their fullest extreme and you're landing only on your heels and then repeating that process.
Yeah, we were definitely tired by the end of that day and sore. But no, it was just such a great time. And then I remember Jamila like being a bit emotional just because she was like dancing with Ted and doing this little...
Jamila in person, Jamila the actor was emotional.
I think so.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Hit her in the feels and just... It was really a moment for all of us because it was nighttime and everybody enjoyed themselves and it was just
I wanted to
almost
mention that.
Like a finale.
Yeah,
it really is.
And it was the last thing we filmed of the episode for the week too. Yes. So it's the end of
there's an emotional arc to a week when you're shooting these things.
Yeah.
Like you definitely know like the martini shot, the last setup on the last night, you're like, I'm not going to see these guys for a little bit.
Yeah, like I remember just ending that day and just driving home and I couldn't stop smiling, just, thinking about that moment.
The town square of The Good Place exists in real life. It's on the Universal backlot in Universal City. And boy, does it look pretty at night. Like that was even looking past you into deep subject of those frames, like it's pretty.
Mm-hmm.
It's really pretty.
Yeah.
Earlier in the show, it said, you know, Michael is trying to reboot Janet and can't, and the reason is friends. And the reason is friends on this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Eleanor teasing Tahani and listing, you know, multiple giraffe, narcissist, socialite, whatever, that's a real moment of connection for them. And it really does, you know, that combined with them offering Michael honorary human status, like, it's lovely. And you realize, like, all we have is each other.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier in the episode, Tahani's like, well, why don't those of us who can get on the balloon, we'll go ahead and whatever. And she's ready, you know, she's willing at that moment in a moment of selfishness to split off and to, you know, be like, sorry, you didn't make it to heaven. Here we're back together. Like, this is the group that's going to risk everything, do the most human thing of all time, something that's futile with unearned bravado or whatever it is. It's about the friendships at this point.
Yeah, and I think a really cool thing about this episode too is in the world of our show, it's sort of a bottle episode because we don't go anywhere else and it's only the main characters.
Oh, wow, that's true.
No flashbacks, yeah.
No flashbacks, no other characters. Sean, you appear briefly in a text message.
Via text?
Yeah.
Yes.
Some of my best work.
Soup, yes, yep. You were great. It was nice to have you there that night, but...
I wasn't there.
But it...
We put him on a ladder. It was weird just to get his face up high, just to like circle it.
But it also like helps to, because it allowed the episode to breathe a little bit more. And there was like the last half of the episode is just the characters enjoying each other.
Mm-hmm.
And like they're, you know, they have the dancing, they have the toast, they have the time where they're sitting in the grass, just like drinking and having fun. Like usually the show is so fast-paced, and the episode before it and the one after are very, very quick and quick, fast-moving episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And this one allows it to just rest for a second in them, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very nice to just have those moments together. And, they, you know, when Eleanor is talking about Tahani and everything and joking around, like, they are laughing. Like,
right.
it's like they are, like, they love each other. Like, they know they can joke about each other, and it's not just a one-off joke. It's...
I want to say this in the best way possible, because I mean it in the best way possible. When Chidi's saying to Eleanor, like, I wish we had met under normal circumstances, like you had come to one of my philosophy classes or we had met at a philosophy conference or whatever, That's Kristen Bell laughing. Mm. You know what I mean? So grounded. Like she, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe that. Like that's the most earnest. That's how she laughs in real life. Mm-hmm. Like when something really gets her.
That moment also has payoff in the finale. It's like, I wish you just knocked on my door asking me about ethics.
Right. Mm.
That's not lost on me too. Yeah. Like she comes through.
Yeah.
Yeah. This show, man.
Oh.
Manny, people yell Bortles at you on the street.
Yes.
How else has your life changed? Like Comic-Con was a thing. Mm-hmm. What are you getting more and different and interesting appointments these days? For other work?
Oh, I think so. I get the liberty of being more picky with the projects that I audition for sure. or choose. But I'm always like, oh man, what's next? Am I ever going to work again?
I mean, that's the actor thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, fortunately, this show has opened up some doors, whether they be with some of the people on the show, mm-hmm. Getting to work on their separate projects, like with Drew Goddard, or some people who've seen the show. Like now, when I go into a room after I do an audition, it's not the case all the time, but they're like, we love the show. Yeah. We think it's amazing. And just to be able to get that kind of gratitude from, you know, your peers or people that are within your industry is very...
It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
What would be great?
What would be great? I don't know. I like to play around. And as much as I love Jason, I would definitely love to go onto the other side of the spectrum and do like a hard emotional drama or indie. I just like... switching back and forth or just exploring different things.
You mentioned Drew Goddard. I feel like you've just announced a secret Drew Goddard-based hip-hop dance project.
Yep, that's it. Me and Drew are going on the road. We're going to be competing against
the two-person dance crew?
Yes, against all the two-person dance crews in America.
Bad times at the dance crew?
Yes, exactly. But yeah, no, it's honestly... Yeah, being with all these people from Drew to Morgan to Mike, people know their work and their work is respected, and just getting to be a part of it and being associated with them, it opens up doors for me, I'd hope.
I met your parents yesterday.
Yes.
Your parents came to set. Have they done that before?
No, they have not.
Where do they live?
They live in Vancouver, Canada. Shout out to Vancouver, or Richmond specifically. And they never came to set, and I've never seen them so happy and lively and emotional, and it was such a weird thing to see. It was nuts. it was the first time they came to set.
Ever.
They've never visited me. Ever. And I think I'd like to thank Ted Danson for that, because I think once they knew that I was working with Ted, they were like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, let's go visit you over there, whatever
you're
doing.
We'll go meet Sam Malone, that's fine.
Yeah.
Wow.
But before, they didn't express the biggest interest. But now, it was the first time that they visited me and they loved it. And it was so sweet to see them smile. Meeting everybody. And it also helped that everybody said that I was an okay guy or a pretty nice guy. And I was like, oh, thanks, guys.
I don't know that that was ever in question. Yeah. And now a word from our sponsors.
We took something everyone loves, ice cream, and ruined it a little so you could have more of it. It's perfect for when you want dessert, but you kind of hate yourself. Punish yourself a tiny bit. With frozen yogurt, the treat that's fine.
This episode ends with something that I, as a fan of the show, found emotionally difficult. I found it difficult for two reasons. What I'm describing is, of course, the neighborhood. Everything we've ever known crumbles into nothingness. Tiles fold up and into themselves. They rise like smoke and I think get sucked down a whirlpool at the same time. Mm-hmm. And the last thing we see is the ladybug, obviously a reference to things earlier in the arc of the show, that then crumbles into nothingness. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching this and having two distinct feelings. One, the omniscient view as part of the cast, part of a but even on behalf of like the writers and producers, like, this is a terrible idea. Like, we've just created, you know, I don't know, 23 episodes of television to this point or something. Yeah. And they're gone. Like, literally, like, the known reality is gone. And then on a personal note, like, as a fan, it was like, wait a second, I cared about that place.
Mm-hmm.
I cared about that. Like, there's no going back. It's gone. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I don't know where it went. It went to black. Like,
went away.
It went away.
Yeah.
I love about this show that you, as you've said, it feels like series finales happen frequently per season.
Yeah.
Which is risky, and you're burning through story and you're burning through plot points and devices. Were you sure? Was the room sure that the fake good place that was always inside us, that doesn't sound as good as you think it does, was that all we knew we were headed there?
I think Mike was a lot more confident than we all were, because, I mean, yeah, this is what our show looks like. And all of a sudden we're taking that away. Mm-hmm. And for the rest of the season, it's you're everywhere else but there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of a weird feeling of like everyone, I think, feels just a little bit lost without their home, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the part of the risk of this show, is like the hallmark of a TV show is its standing sets. Like, mm-hmm. like that's yeah. how you recognize, you know, the living room from All in the Family. Like the neighborhood is this for this show. And so like, it's really cool also that like, Mike's way of doing things, like he chose to put that moment in the towards the end of the season, not the very last episode of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So like the viewers are like, oh, we get to see more. We get to see what happens after the neighborhood yeah. goes away. But an amazing ending for that episode, because that will make people come back next week. Like, what are they even going to show? Everything yeah. went to black.
I love towards the end of this too. You know, we've seen in a previous episode that Michael has difficulty, in fact, can't marbleize Janet, and bad uh-huh. Janet. No problem.
No.
It happens in 2 seconds.
What are you
yeah.
doing?
Yeah. And we've seen those. It's an actual marble?
Yeah.
Is it just a marble? What is it?
It's just a marble. And then our amazing effects guy, David Niedernagel, he'll put, you know, Janet's, Darcy's face on it. Mm-hmm. And a couple times we've seen it making a different weird face. But yeah, it's just, I remember we bought, I don't know, like 300 different marbles. It was just to like... literally just sets of marbles off Amazon. It was like, just pick what kind of marble. And it was like bigger than a normal marble because, you know, you got to see it. Mm-hmm. One of them. We had so many marbles.
I mean, that's the thing that I find so fascinating about your work. We talked in a recent episode of this podcast about the ostrich steak on a novelty pencil that said, oh, Lordy, yeah, Lordy, yes. I'm over 40.
Yeah, that was fun.
I mean, do you concept though? Like you bring in a drawing and they go, how's this? And they're like, bigger or smaller or...
We definitely had the oversized pencils. You know, there's all these production meetings and then meetings to like make this, and then a follow up meeting to be like, here's the pencil. It's like the pencil's the right size. I think on the day, I don't know what the meet was, but it was, we had like multiple sizes and to make it fit the pencil. And it literally said that on the pencil, and you had to put the meat on in a way so you could still read it to not mm-hmm. like step on the bit.
What is like your, I don't know, I guess maybe your, do you have a prop that you guys were really proud of? That you made, whether it be the first or second season?
Yeah, I would say multiple times a season. That Janet sinkhole tool was a real cool thing that we got made.
What was that?
It started as like a novelty oversized like Swiss Army knife. And then I think we like had this company weld a bunch of like extending like magnet sticks on them. Like they would use like get your keys out of like a drain.
Oh, yeah.
And then we put this like plastic screen, like phone size display on the front of it, which... fun little note, was a old Grizzle phone from Parks and Rec.
No way.
Because we just had a bunch of this in the prop truck. And we're like, that's hilarious. Pull the Grizzle logo off and we'll just mount that to the front. And then in post, they put whatever like stuff.
And where was
it.
This? I don't. This was in the sinkhole in the restaurant?
This was, yeah, the sinkhole season one episode, whatever. Yes. But yeah, her sinkhole tool, she's like walking around with it to like survey the sinkhole. Like that was a pretty cool
one. One of my favorites, because it's obviously something made from whole cloth. Like it's, you know, something that you ordered from a prop house or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Was maybe in the episode prior to this, I've lost track of time, space, and dimension, Janet's magnet handcuffs.
Oh, yes.
The magnet handcuffs that made her drunk, like, actually stuck together, mm-hmm. actually lit up, like, mm-hmm. when they were closed or whatever. I mean, they were kind of a practical prop.
Like, it was, yeah. So, yeah, they lit up on the day. So it was, like, measuring Darcy's wrists.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had, like, four or five versions of that and just getting approval because she's wearing it the whole time, so it has to look right. She has to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's like, it's not like a thing that we have to like unscrew her out of. So it's a magnet.
Right.
And obviously she could just hold her hands together and then, you know, in between takes, turning it off because it has a battery you have to charge. It's like a weird little thing.
Yeah.
And like overnight, like, all right, make sure Janet's bracelets are charging. And it's just like a weird, like my department has weird things we say all the time. And it's funny when we have like day player crew members come in. It's like, no, that wouldn't happen because they're in the afterlife, but they think they're in heaven, but they're in hell. But it's the bad place. And no, so it's like her sinkhole tool because this big hole opened up. And then there's like a fire monster. And we just say things casually all the time. And people are like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Especially during season one before any of it had aired. Sure. We'd be talking so just like normally about things. And people are like, I don't know what you're talking about, dude.
You guys are super good at it. Like, you're absolute kabuki ninjas that, like, just sneak in. I'm thinking of Julie and Jordan that are always around resetting things. You know, the second they roll camera and you go, oh, I need my... And it's like, oh, they put it right in front of me. Mm-hmm.
Julie Witherington, Jordan Steinberg, Gay Perello. Yeah,
yeah. Pretty great.
Tom Zawacki.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Zawacki, what's good?
We have a restaurant in the good place called PB&J. That's it. And I remember during season two, we had a bunch of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches we're handing to background and whatnot. And then when we were over, I was like, it's been like a decade since I had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And I ate one. And I was like, why is this so good? And I think it was a mixture of childhood. And that's just a good thing. And so since then, a couple of days of Crafty, I'm like, I'm hungry. I don't want a bag of chips. I'll be like, yo, Terry at Crafty, I'm going to make me a PB&J. And I don't care if I'm over 30 and I have gray hairs in my beard. It's a delicious snack.
Tyler Strasley, what's good?
Birds.
I elaborated so much more on mine, dude.
I don't know why, but I love birds so much. And ever since I was a kid, I've loved birds. Like, I had pet birds. I liked wild birds. Yeah. I actually
bird.
Well, I like, okay. Well, I could give specifics, but it'd make me seem weird.
You're already.
Oh, because this is it.
That ship
okay, yeah.
What's your favorite bird?
I really like cockatiels.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. What? Yeah, they're really sweet, and they can sometimes talk, and I had four of them when I was a kid.
This is going to make me sound dumb. Is that a real bird?
It is a real bird.
Yeah. Not cockatiel?
They're native
cockatiel?
To Australia. Yeah, it's like a smaller bird. Now I sound weird now.
Was that Beretta's bird? You're too young for Beretta. Move on.
I like birds, and sometimes I look at pictures of birds to calm me down when I'm anxious.
I like that.
Is this a bit?
No.
All right.
Yeah, oh this, is all, this is all this is all sincere.
Manny Jacinto, what's good?
PB&J and birds. All right.
You got a lot to top.
I don't know if I can top that. But I would like to give a what's good shout out to a show called Asian AF. Mm. It's a comedy show at UCB. They gather a bunch of Asian American artists, whether they be improv players, actors, comedians, magicians. They come together and put on a show once a month. Created by a buddy of mine, Will Choi. And I also want to shout it out because they're having a show tonight. And one of their special guests is one of our writers, Andrew Law.
Hey, cool. Oh.
And one of their main improv players is the one and only Pillboy, Eugene Cordero.
Eugene Cordero.
Pillboy.
Shout out to Asian AF.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, you guys. This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Thank you for listening. Now go be your best self. Go do something good.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. And now, to deliver our credit sequence, is Bad Janet. Take it away, Bad Janet.
Whatever. If you enjoyed this podcast, which, like, how is that even possible? Please subscribe. It's available on all major podcasting platforms or wherever you get your podcasts. I don't even know. Or if you don't want to subscribe, you can also just listen to your mom's butt, you fat dink. You burnt.
Why don't I handle the credits? The podcast is hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Ew.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Who?
It's written by Lizzie Pace.
Okay.
And the music is composed by David Schwartz.
David Schwartz. See you next time, nerds.